Welcome to the True Blue LA Podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. The Dodgers are 57-29 after going 3-4 last week. They are still 12 games ahead of the Rockies in the NL West with 1 week to play before the All-Star break. Eric Steven, Dodgers guru, expert. How's it going?
Okay.
I gotta hype you up a little bit.
I don't know. Vlad. It's hot, right? It's summer hot right now, so my mood is changing with the heat.
We have a bit of a heat wave here in Kansas City, but I'm surprised. This is the first summer I can remember where I'm kind of used to it. A lot of people around me are complaining about it. I'm just like, it's fine. I went running in it. It's okay.
I will say this. It's been pretty good, actually, so far. There was a hot stretch a couple weeks back where I think we didn't get quite up to 100, but we were in the 90s a few days, and it was just like, you know, sweat city. There were 2 and 3 shower days. But I remember last year I was on vacation. My uncle turned 80. So we went to Colorado for like a family reunion. And when I got home, my air conditioning broke. You could probably hear it in the background running right now, but, it was so hot, in my apartment. This was like the first week of July, that I couldn't fall asleep. So I actually went to a hotel for 2 nights over the weekend, and then my air conditioning got fixed, and it was glorious. But it hasn't been nearly that hot so far this year, so I'm crossing my fingers. So it really hasn't been that bad.
Well, you know who has been hot this year?
Hmm?
Cody Bellinger.
You know, that's a good point.
Yeah. That's it. All right, next step. We've been starting every episode with a Cody Bellinger update. You got one for us?
Yeah, and so I was looking, going over my notes. I do some cutting and pasting from last week, you know, and then just fill in whatever the rest on some of the items here. And I was looking, and last week Cody Bellinger was on pace for 51 homers and 125 RBIs. And his week, last week, the Dodgers played 7 games. He's now on pace for 51 homers and 126 RBIs. So he's keeping it up. Still doing well. So go Cody, I guess, in that regard.
He certainly helped a little bit by Coors Field. The Dodgers, not as much. We're going to talk about that series, the Arizona series, and kind of look forward to the All-Star game coming up next week. But we're going to attempt to go to an ad, Eric. We failed these last 2 weeks. The powers that be have not given us one. We're going to try again. If we just come back in 2 seconds, well, you and I tried.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Okay, so the Dodgers went 1-2 against Arizona and 2-2 against Colorado. These 4-game series in Coors, it seems like they always go, it doesn't matter what the record, they can go 0-4, split the series, they could even sweep. They always seem to go like this.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, they had a stretch, I think it was 2 years ago, where like the Rockies were scoring okay, but some of those games were low. But like the Dodgers just weren't scoring there. And then like all of a sudden, I think that was when the Andrew Tolles game happened, and then it kind of picked up after that. But yeah, it seems like every time Coors comes up, and it's been better with the humidor, I mean, for the most part in recent years, where the offense isn't quite as crazy. But, the manager, whether it was Don Mattingly when he was here or now Dave Roberts, they're always, like, worried, like, okay, Coors is coming up. I have to plan for that. And it's usually, like, taking an extra reliever or playing, like, your most athletic outfield possible because there's so much room to run. And then you're, like, thinking about it afterwards. Like, there's almost always, like, a mid-series bullpen move or after the series because you have to, like, sort of have your pitching staff recover. And this weekend was like a prime Coors weekend, man. Like this year at Coors has been crazy. Like the park factor, Baseball Reference uses a 3-year park factor for theirs. And so it's like a rolling kind of number usually. And it's 120 this year for Coors, like in the heyday in like the late 90s, it was like, in the mid 120s, basically a lot. And then it's been in the one teens for the most part since. So it's been like a little bit less, but this year it's back up to 120. And if you just use the 1-year park factor this year, it's 127, which is, it's like literally hitting on the moon. Like it's nuts. And like, that's what it kind of felt like this weekend. I'm linking this in the show notes. Sam Miller at ESPN wrote a piece about how Coors is this year. And he had all these numbers, and I think the main takeaway was that basically a lot of the numbers, like batted ball type things, are, you know, some of them are similar, but the basic gist is, like, you know, like home runs, they're, you know, their home runs are up around baseball, so it's not that big of a thing there. But it's mostly like balls in play at Coors Field are like just astronomically like falling for hits, like this year more than normal. Like their pitchers are like striking out roughly similar, and they're just getting crushed, you know, at home as opposed to on the road. I was looking in, the Rockies are always kind of screwed in this regard, and because they have to always come back to Coors. Like they look, sometimes they look great there, but then everyone gets affected. Like when you go on the road after you go to Coors, there's always like an effect there. But the Rockies have to do that like all season, and they always get screwed up. So they're like actual splits. It's not, you know, it's not usually fair to just look at splits and say, well, that guy's not a good player. Look at those crazy splits. But even that said, like this year's splits are nuts. Like the Rockies, just real base stuff here. They're averaging 7 runs a game at home. 923 OPS at Coors Field, 660 on the road. Like that's nuts. Like Charlie Blackman, he's like the most extreme example this year. 1506 at home, 653 on the road. But 1506, like that's crazy. But yeah, so like this weekend, they scored 65 runs in 5 games, and that had like a relative pitcher's duel. The Saturday game was 5-3. And just to go straight, that was the pitcher's duel. Like, that's not a pitcher's duel. Like every other game, the winning team scored double digits. So
I think my favorite tidbit of just how Coors is Coors, a third of Hyunjin Ryu, who we're going to talk about later when we get to the All-Star games, earned runs this year came in that one start.
Oh my God. I there was all sorts of ways to like sort of spin his start. Cause he really, he was pitching well too. Like he gave up, he had the one bad pitch early, right? So he gave up like 2 runs, but he was through 4 innings, and like he had only given up 2 runs. So in my mind, I'm thinking, man, like Hyunjin Ryu, like he's having such a great season that he's like even Coors isn't affecting him. And then like then he literally didn't get an out in the 5th, and he just got they just hammered him. That inning was crazy, by the way. That was a classic Coors inning. But the Dodgers turned around and had a similar inning on Sunday, but the Rockies had like 8 straight hits, and then with errors, they had, I think, 10 straight guys reach base. It was nuts. Joe Kelly was in the middle of that, and he was, I think he had some, like, he didn't, like, he just was interviewed about it, and he said the official scorer was crazy. He didn't agree with him because he gave up 5 hits, but I don't know. It's just kind of funny. But, like, you look back, there's always this classic Coors Field series in like the second year, 1996, Dodgers Rockies. It included the most Coors Field game of all time, in my opinion. It was a 16-15 game that the Rockies won on a walk-off. But that game, like, Eric Young had six steals. The Rockies stole 10 bases as a team. And, like, it was just home runs galore. They scored, oh, man, I had it in front of me. It's like, I think it was 85 runs in those four games. 85 runs in 1996 in those four games. And that's the only four-game series that's ever scored more than the Dodgers and Rockies. They scored 65 this weekend. And I was looking, because there's been some crazy three-game series, but, like, the most I could find for a three-game series there was 60 runs a couple times, which is, 20 a game, that's nuts. But, like, it didn't reach the – so it was the second highest series of any length there between the Dodgers and Rockies. To show you how Coors has been this year, the last time the Rockies were home was – 2 weeks ago when the Padres were there and they scored an MLB record 92 runs in four games, that series was insane. And so it almost made the Dodgers 65 run series seem tame, but just an insane way. And it's just one of, like, you had to endure the Dodgers. They split that series with them. They lost 2 of 3 to Arizona. Like, this was kind of a, they hit a wall. Like, they were playing 18, they had 18 games, 18 days in a row with a game. They're off today. We're recording on a Monday, and this is their last off day before the All-Star break. But, like, they inserted, like, Tony Gonsolin to give the staff, like, an extra day again and, you know, to give them rest because, you know, they always try to give extra rest when possible. Then, like, Gonsolin kind of faltered, and then everyone at Coors faltered basically on the mound. So, like, the starting pitching has been so, so good this year. And then they just ran into a buzzsaw this week. But it's all funny. Like, we talked at the beginning of the podcast, like, how am I doing? Like, I said my mood is changing with the weather. But, like, relatively, I'm doing pretty good. You know, I feel all right. But, like, and I think that's the way the Dodgers, they were 3-4. Like, so it was a bad week, but it's just 3-4. Like, it just happened to be their first losing month or losing week in 2.5 months. So, like, they won 73% of their games in between those 2 weeks. So, like, they're doing okay.
Yeah, and a lot of really good teams are kind of in a lull right now. So not that these matter at all, but the Dodgers kind of haven't moved from that. It's from their number one power ranking spot, which they sort of seized last week in dramatic fashion with the series against the Rockies. So I have a confession, Eric.
Yes.
For almost the last 24 hours, I think it was around 4 p.m. today that I figured it out. I thought the All-Star game was this week. I don't know. I knew it wasn't because I'm going to the Boston series, which I knew was the first series afterwards.
Yeah.
But I just was, I think, fusing these 2 weeks together. So I was like, yeah, we're going to talk about the All-Star game, and then next week we'll talk about the how it actually went, and then I'll go to Boston to see the game. so I've been very ready to talk about the All-Star game if you're ready to.
Yeah, and it is relevant this week because the rosters were announced, so we have a little bit to talk about.
And to be clear, the All-Star game, not this week. Dodgers are going to play a sixth game at home, two against the Diamondbacks and four against the Padres, and then they get a nice little break.
Yeah, what a weird little homestand. What the hell is a two-game series doing in there? Like, why can't they just do 3-3 like the old days? But, and then also, I was looking because someone, I emailed or tweeted something about that last week, and someone tweeted me back about another thing next week, and I looked it up. What is it? Cubs, White Sox, and Reds, Indians. They're playing interleague series next weekend, but it's Saturday, Sunday. All four of those teams are off Friday.
Yeah.
Who the hell is off on a Friday? That's stupid.
Ugh. Yeah, it's just not—it's not right, Eric. We need to screw the speeding up the game. We just need to get back to lots and lots of three-game series.
Play the game, yeah.
So, making the All-Star game, Cody Bellinger, the entire starting rotation.
Right. Yeah.
Well, not quite. Not quite. No. So, who made it, Eric? Who actually made it?
So it was in two waves. I have a confession to make, too, speaking of all-star ignorance. last week, we sort of talked about the process. Right. We might have to change the title of this week. No, last week, we went over the new process because they split up the fans voting into like primaries and then starters election. I don't know. It was kind of weird. But then as we're going through the process, I assumed there was going to be a final vote for that final roster spot.
And I think we talked about this. When we talked about it, there's not.
Well, there's surely going to be a final vote. All of yesterday, I was like going through like old like stuff from MLB. And I'm like, who are the final vote candidates? Like, and we'll get to that, why I was looking that up. But like, it was just like, there's no final vote. So I guess that's what they were trying to, because the final vote is that like crazy voter push that they try to bombast like social media with it.
I'm just disconnected, but my pulse is that the final, like, I would always see people that weren't the official marketing teams of teams talk about the final vote and get excited about it. I didn't really see a lot of this whole nomination primary thing really excite too many people. Am I just out of touch? Am I wrong, or is it the children?
Won't somebody think of that? I think it's because like we already saw, like, they released actual numbers of the voting of the primary, you know, like, so Cody Bellinger had the most votes. Yelich was right behind him. And then Trout, they all got like over 3 million votes. And you saw like relative numbers and things like that. But then all that got wiped out for the starters thing. And then they just did this like at the very end, they released the percentages of vote. But I think it was like we saw who the clear leaders were. And that was unlikely to change, right? Like all of a sudden it's like, well, now that we've eliminated candidates like 4 through 6, clearly that second and third place guy is going to make the leap. I actually didn't even look to see if any of that happened, because I didn't really care. Like, because from a Dodger standpoint, at least, like, Bellinger was clearly going to start. Like, he ended up finishing second in the starter election, even though he had the top overall in the primary. But like, you know, he's starting in the outfield. He's one of the three. And like, Jock was ninth in the primary, and like, he had no chance. So like, that was obvious. And they were the only Dodgers involved. So it's like, it didn't seem that interesting to me. It was they hyped it up as a 28-hour thing, but you could still only vote once. Like, the final vote was like this thing where all you had to do is like tweet a dumb hashtag, and you could do it like over and over and over again. And I think that fans got excited. Like, teams built marketing things around that, where they would host fans in like a suite and then just have them bang around on the computer for like 24 hours and to try to get there. So like, I think that's been, like the marketing part behind it. And so they kind of lost that without the final vote.
Okay. Enough of that tangent. Who on the Dodgers is going to play in the All-Star game, or maybe on the roster? So, maybe they won't all play. We'll see.
I guess you're right.
Dave Roberts. So Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger starting, not officially, but I think Robert said the day the starters came out that Bellinger would be starting in center. I believe it's Yelich in left and Ronald Acuna Jr. in right. I think that's where he went, but Bellinger's going to be in center. And then the three Dodgers starting pitchers made it. It's only the second time, or if you want to get technical, the third time they've had three starting pitchers make an All-Star game in 1 year. 49, they did it with Preacher Road, Don Newcomb, and Ralph Branca. 62, they had for 4 years, they had two All-Star games for a while. This was right before the Players Union, a few years before the Players Union got started. So players were trying to like raise money to add to their like players' pension fund, because that was kind of all they had at that point. So they played two All-Star games every year. So in 62, in game one, it was Koufax and Drysdale, and then for game two, Johnny Padres made it. So it was like this weird double All-Star game. They were like a couple weeks apart in different stadiums. So I don't think I count that. I mean, I kind of do, but it was, you know, it's not the same. So this year, the three are, I mean, Hyunjin Ryu was obviously going to happen. Walker Buehler, which we talked about as possible making it. And then Clayton Kershaw, he made it. Ryu and Buehler were players selections. The players get to vote in five starters and three relievers, then one at every position. And Ryu finished a few, like 20 votes, I think, behind Max Scherzer. I think it was like 230 to 210. And then Buehler was fifth, just behind Jacob deGrom. Luis Castillo got third in that voting. So those were the five from the players. And then Kershaw was a commissioner's office selection. They kind of fill out the rest of the roster. I think with him, it's obviously a legacy pick, but it's not like he's having a bad year. Like I was looking, he's actually he's sixth in the National
League. The legacy picks are kind of fun,
ERA.
I think. Like he certainly can get out of hand sometimes.
He's a bona fide star.
Yeah,
right.
If we're gonna do this thing where every team has to have a player, then you know, I have a lot of criticism for Derek Jeter and some of the years he got in, but you can't not have him. So.
Right, like this isn't like Ichiro in his last year or something like that. You know, it's not like someone who's like barely scraping by. Like Kershaw is still a very viable starter.
Someone, and I think it was Dave Roberts was saying that. That said, I do all-star appearances, whether directly or indirectly, affects things like contract proceedings and your sort of stature as a player. And I think Dave Roberts suggested that there really should be like an all MLB team at the end of the year that can take everything into account and then kind of maybe take the sway of that. So it becomes a game that's all about fun as opposed to this thing actually sort of puts a feather in your cap. Cause I do feel bad.
I would
about
love
that.
Like look at the NBA, like NBA free agency just started. And I'm technically hoping that like Kawhi Leonard makes his decision while we're recording, just so we can have our reaction to it.
But Toronto. I need that so badly. There is no one left for the Lakers to sign if he goes to Toronto.
I can't imagine. Like, I don't know why Kawhi wouldn't stay in Toronto. But I'm holding out hope that he does join Lakers. But I'm not confident that it's going to happen. And I realize they're kind of screwed if he doesn't. So I'm just sort of like quietly like praying to my Kawhi shrine as we speak. But NBA, like they have a thing where like there's different levels of like a maximum contract you can get based on either first, second, or third team all NBA, things. And I agree with that. I like the idea of the end of season thing, like because I wrote something about this for SB Nation, and it wasn't like I don't like doing like the these guys are all star snubs, you know, that kind of thing. But I just sort of laid it out. I'm like, I get it. Like, you know, people vote because it's the first half, but like, and then there's like legacy picks. There's like people are actual stars, even if they're not necessarily performing. So I completely get it. But my thing was like, if every year we're voting on this year's stats, then the second half stats never count for any of this. So I was kind of looking back to see who did some notable things like all-star break to all-star break. And like a couple Dodgers showed up who we'll talk about who didn't make it, who actually have decent cases this year, one better than the other, I think. But
let's talk about those now.
Right. Sure. So, I just wanted to say before we do that, usually they don't really announce this until like the next weekend or something. But the Dodgers just came out and said it. Roberts is the manager, so he gets the call. Ryu is going to start the game, so good for him. He is the 12th different pitcher to start an All-Star game. Clayton Kershaw, still not one of those, because apparently Matt Harvey was better, whatever. But that game was in New York. That, of course, he was going to start that game. But anyway, and it's the 16th time overall. Don Drysdale started 5 All-Star games. He's the only Dodger to start more than one. So it was kind of funny. Buehler was a first-timer. Kershaw, he has 8th selection. There's only one Dodger who's been an All-Star more than Kershaw, and it was, can you name him?
I saw this tweet and I have forgotten.
I'll say it's.
Oh wait, no, I know player. It. Pee Wee Reese.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, I remember the tweet. I would not have guessed that, by the way, had I not seen the tweet.
There's a bunch of guys with 8: Kershaw, Roy Campanella, Gil Hodges, Steve Garvey, Don Drysdale, and then Don Drysdale is an asterisk because technically he was named to 9 All-Star games, but 1959 was 2 of them. So like that's only 1 year, so it's really only 8. But he started both games, so that's 2 of his 5 starts, so very weird. But yeah, so the two, the main snub, I thought, was Max Muncy. He has 20 home runs. He is, 924 OPS. He's 4th in baseball reference war in the National League right now. Like, not, like, at his position. He's just 4th overall.
Yeah, and 8th on F4, yeah, have that up.
Yeah, 3.5 and 3.1 and are those two numbers. So like, for, I mean, it's basically a little bit past the halfway point. So he's like a six plus win player, which is pretty crazy. And like to show you that, I think Bellinger is at 6.6 Baseball Reference WAR already. Maybe we'll do that shortly after, like maybe in the next few weeks, where just because he's getting to the point where not too many people just overall have total seasons with that high of a WAR.
No, I thought next week would be a good time to kind of review the last half a little bit more in depth. So
yeah, so we'll get into that at some point. So if you look at like OPS plus or wins WRC plus, like Muncy's 9th in OPS plus, 10th in WRC plus. I was looking at the top 20 in weighted runs created plus. 16 of those were all-stars, 4 missed, 1 was Muncy, and then the other 3 were all lower than Muncy who didn't make it. Juan Soto, Rhys Hoskins, and Hunter Renfro. So, like, I don't know, man. And then getting back to my point earlier, from all-star break to all-star break, he has a 145 WRC+, plus, and that's tied for 6th in the National League. So he's, like, one of the very best players in the National League, regardless of position. And then you look at like his defense, how that factors into his WAR, which is why it's higher. He's been a plus defender, I mean, at least above average at first, second, and third. And like he's almost played as many innings at second as he has at first. And then he's also started 17 games at third. So very valuable, probably should have made it. The thing is with no final vote, there's still going to be like, I think, injury replacements and things like that coming in the next week. But so he might still make it, but man, like I thought he was the biggest snub. Justin Turner is the other one. His case is, he has like a quietly good year so far this year, but you know, there's a lot of like third basemen in the National League. Anthony Rendon finally made the first All-Star game. Turner from All-Star break to All-Star break, he had a really strong second half last year. He'd be one of those guys that benefits from the last year sort of look at it. He has a 154 WRC plus. That's 4th in the National League since last year. So, those two guys got sort of the short end of the stick. I think Muncy has a chance to make it if someone drops out, but you know it'll be hard pressed. Excuse me, to see if that actually happens, because it seems like a lot of the replacements tend to be pitchers. But we'll see how it goes.
So I have a final votee question for you. After this ad break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And we're back. So one thing that we do get to talk about, since it's in, in an interesting way, is the National League needs a designated hitter, which Dave Roberts gets to pick, and hasn't yet. So go ahead. Has he picked?
Nothing is official, but yesterday I saw some Pirates stuff, and Pirates were on ESPN tonight playing the Cubs, and I believe Josh Bell has basically been told that he's going to be the designated hitter.
Who would you vote for is my question to you.
I mean, that's not a bad pick. Like he actually hit 3 home runs today too, which is kind of funny. I guess it's hard to go worse than Josh Bell at this point. Like, he's had a really good year. So like, Freddie Freeman won the vote for first base. Like, he's always good, but, he couldn't do it, but so it'd be one of the reserves. But I would probably say I guess if it's not Josh Bell, probably Anthony Rendon.
No, Pete Alonso was the other name I was going to throw into.
Yeah. That's a good point. He has a lot of home runs, but I just, his overall like numbers aren't as good as those other two. But I mean, yeah. So, but yeah, I think it's going to be Josh Bell, and I don't really have a problem with that.
Anything else you want to talk about the All-Star game?
Not really.
I've always enjoyed how kind of low key it is and how just kind of silly it is, as an All-Star game should be. It feels like the NBA game is starting to get there. This year was a very similar thing. The NFL will never figure it out.
Right. I think too, like, I think MLB kind of screwed this up. I think they're generally probably tone deaf on some things, and this is part of it. Like they timed their All-Star roster like selection show at 2:30 Pacific time yesterday, and the NBA free agency period opened at 3. So like all the news was breaking like in that like 90 minutes before 3 o'clock.
Yeah, the Urias news just snuck into my NBA Twitter list, which I was glued to.
Huh. And it just like kept like it dwarfed like who's paying attention to MLB All-Star selections when like, you know, the entire shape of the NBA is changing in like 4 hours, basically. So yeah, it was odd, and it just kind of got buried. They could have met in a number of different ways, and like, you know, the day, like, these dates are known ahead of time. I know they tend to generally announce the rosters on a Sunday. You can always announce them on a Saturday. Like it's, you know, whatever, like do something where it's like unique and you have your own time. I just thought they kind of missed the boat on that one.
Sure. I'm sure that's a lesson they'll learn, because this was the first year where it wasn't at midnight for the NBA. So wouldn't be surprised if they just weren't thinking about it. And hopefully they learned the lesson from that. But, and hopefully, yeah, I think I'm rooting for a different voting thing next year. Maybe go back to the other one. Bring back the final vote. I missed the final vote.
I think they should do something that's similar to the final vote, but for every spot.
That could be fun. I don't know. I think that could be fun.
You just, let's like, so you just match up five guys and like, you know, only one of them is going to be an All-Star. And so it's almost like you're setting up like a World Cup draw. But only like maybe like one, maybe you do it where two people from each group get in. I don't know. There's a way to do this. Let's figure it out. That's our off-season project.
Okay. Before that, you want to answer some questions from Craig?
Yeah, let's do it.
Still don't have intro music of that. Maybe our new editor, Brian, will whip us up something.
Yeah.
Hint, hint. First question. The Dodgers are on a pace to break their team home run record for the third straight season. I think we got asked this, and I predicted they would. Averaging 1.62 home runs per game, the Dodgers could set a new record in game 146. That's really early.
Yeah.
Still, even to hit the 97 home runs to set a new season is a lot of home runs, and the following questions relate to the chase. How many Dodgers will end up with 20 or more home runs? The current record is 7, set in 2018.
So the number of people, so they already have 3. This shows you one of these things where it's just the era we're in. Like, so Max Muncy hit his 20th home run, I think, on Friday. So that gave the Dodgers 3. Bellinger has 27. Jock has 20. Muncy has 20. And so I think they were the 5th team, maybe the 6th. I think it was the 5th to have 3 players with 20 home runs before July. Part of this was that the season started on March 28th, so they earlier than a lot of seasons. But, you know, it made it seem like a big deal that only 5 teams have done it. And then, like, the Padres did it Sunday. So, like, it's like, okay, there's just a lot of home runs now. That's part of it. So, still pretty rare, but, like, I don't know. So, Craig's asking who's going to hit or how many Dodgers are going to hit 20. They already have 3. There's only one other player in double digits right now, and that's Kike at 13. I will, you know, even though his playing time, I think he's going to take a hit, he'll get the other 7. Turner almost always has a flourish at some point, and there's still enough time left in the season. Seager could have a flourish if he comes back. Man, I don't think about
above average Major League Baseball player Chris Taylor, by the way.
Right.
Two weeks since we recorded that episode where he was one of the worst hitters in baseball, and now he has 110 OPS plus.
Yeah, and Craig has a sort of a related question to him, and I have some numbers on him, so we'll get to him in a second. Okay. I don't think he's going to get there. So, but just looking at the list, like Verdugo has 9.
Is there like a world where Corey Seager comes back and he just goes on a tear? I don't think so. Well, maybe.
But he's been a 26 home run guy. Like,
but he's missing. You know, I don't think they're going to rush him back. They don't got the.
No, he's the reports now are that basically he and Pollock are back for the Boston series, the first series.
Oh,
back.
Don't excite me.
So
I assume
as always
later.
As always, you know, slow play injuries. Like if they say one thing, add a week or whatever. But but still, it sounds like they're going to be back. They're already hitting. Like so.
But even if he's on the I mean, and again, I didn't see this report. Is he an everyday starter? Like, are they going to?
They're not activating him to not start him. So yeah, he'll play almost every day. I mean, he'll get rest days, sure, but like he's still going to play. You know, a lot.
So what's your number? 7.
No, God. So the highest number is 6. David Freese has 8, so I will not put it past David Freese. He only needs 12 more at-bats. So,
I mean, I think Kike, Turner, Verdugo, Seager could be your 7.
Verdugo? I mean, he's got a...
he's at 9.
I don't see it. I only think the number's going to be 5. Okay. I think one of Turner and Seager don't make it.
I'm going to go 6. Okay, we did 20 home runs. Now, how about 10? How many players will end up with 10 or more home runs by the end of the year? The current record, again set last year, is 10. It's a lot of 10s.
So it's 10 tens. They already have the 4. It's the 320s and Kike. So and then Turner's 9, Verdugo's 9, Seager, Taylor, Freezer at 8. So like though in you know
so like 9 is a virtual lock.
I think so. And then it gets to Austin Barnes with 5, got to play to hit home runs. So are they acquiring they're not acquiring like a Machado this year, you know, someone who's like clearly going to come in and play every day.
I think the only other option would be like they just pull the trigger on Will Smith starting catcher, which you and I have talked about this in episodes before. We don't think that's going to happen, at least not with enough time. Yeah.
Yeah. And like,
one other option could be Pollock.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. So he's at 2, but he's going to play. So they could get to 10. Yeah, you know what? They're getting to 10.
Okay.
Forgot about Pollock.
Had to go deep if you rank by home runs on Baseball Ref to get there. Not a believer in Walker Buehler hitting 9 more?
You know what? What about Ryu hitting 10 more? All he needs is 10.
All right. I like this next question. Finally, I think the LA Dodger record of 22 different players with at least 1 home run and is unlikely to be broken or even matched by the 2019 team. How many different Dodgers on this year's team will end up with at least 1 home run? Currently, it's 16 Dodgers with at least 1. After Edwin Rios, there are only 2 position players on the 40-man roster without 1. That's Rocky Gale and Keibert Ruiz. Note that last year there were 3 players acquired after July 1st who hit at least home run on the Dodgers.
Yeah, so like I figure Rios will hit 1 at some point. But like everyone else, like I, you know, Ruiz is a maybe September guy, and like he's not going to play. Rocky Gale's Rocky Gale. So like they're, I'll go 17, and then what do they add? Like another bench guy? Like where does he put? They already are going to have a roster crunch come up, and we'll get to that in a second. But.
So the other thing to consider is does another pitcher hit a home run?
Oh no, pitchers suck at hitting.
Ryu's gonna get one. Ryu's gonna get one this year. No, I feel good about that.
I'm sticking with just 17 only.
18. Austin Barnes and Russell Martin have not had good offensive seasons this far. That's true. Short of an injury, do either of you think Will Smith has a chance to play his way into a starting role by the end of the season? Hey, I covered this.
Right, so we've talked about this.
I'm a little bit more bullish on it than you are, but we both think it's unlikely. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yes, but getting more and more likely.
Okay.
I think it is by the end
of the season, which I was very bullish on. I just didn't think it would happen until like very close to like, let's get this roster tuned up for the playoffs kind of time.
My thought, and we've talked about this at least on like two other episodes, probably. I think, this year already.
I think maybe once before he was even called up.
Right. Yeah. We're like, what about this? And then my brother texted me about it. Like, you know, when do they pull the trigger? Like almost the exact wording of that like kind of a thing. And like, my thing has always been like, they like Barnes and Martin behind the plate, framing, handling pitchers, all that stuff. They would have to like completely crater for a long time for that to happen. So like, and then funny you should ask, because today's July 1st. So I was looking up the June stats for the Dodgers. Austin Barnes in June was 6-44. He had a 4.19 OPS. So the cratering is happening. Like, so I think it has to go on longer, but we're getting closer and closer to actually happening. Dodgers pitchers in June, 4.14 OPS. So very close. 11-55. They were actually 5-11 more. Barnes did homer and double. The Dodgers pitchers didn't have an extra base hit because they're pitchers, and pitchers are terrible hitters. But yeah, so it's bad right now, like at the plate. Like it's the thing about Barnes and Martin, like they actually get on base, like, you know, relative to like their batting, but they're neither one are hitting. Like Martin's actually up to 243. Like that's not a number I expect him to stay at, which is a weird thing to say, but 350 on base, so that'll play. Like Barnes has a 306 on base with a 205 batting average, so he seems to me like he should be like at a minimum, like a 250 guy with his speed and like everything else, because he doesn't strike out like a ton. He strikes out a good amount, but like not a ton. And man, so like it's just been a slog offensively for both of them. But I think it has to. I think he has to crater longer, but he's already done a lot of it. So I think it's getting closer and closer to that. I do think they would pull the trigger. It takes a lot to make that move, but they have to be confident in Smith, but I think they are. So, like, I'm not, like, confident they'll do it, but, like, it's getting closer and closer to reality at this point.
With the expected return of David Freese, AJ Pollock, and Corey Seager in the next 2 weeks, where does the hot-hitting Chris Taylor, again, shocking me, fit into this equation? There's actually more of that question. That's why I didn't add a period there, but I'm actually going to save that after we talk about Chris Taylor for a little bit.
Yeah. So I was looking at Chris Taylor. Remember, we looked at him like 2 weeks ago when he was like, his season numbers were very, very bad.
One of the worst hitters in baseball.
Yeah, season numbers very bad. Batted ball numbers even worse. Like made it like, because this is right when he was taking over for Corey Seager. Like, well, he has to play every day now. This is going to be a problem if he continues to do this. But then he just started hitting, like, you know, house was on fire. And but, like, if you look at it, like, his numbers in April really were the worst part of it. There were only four Dodgers that had a 900 OPS in May and June. Bellinger, Muncy, normal. David Freese, who's, like, the greatest hitter on the planet, you know, in, like, short stints. And Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor actually had a 904 OPS in May. Even though when we looked at him, which was, like, right at the beginning of June, his season numbers were still so bad. That's how bad he was in April. So, like, and his batted ball numbers on the season were still bad. And that was after, like, a strong May. Like, so, like, he's been, like, slowly building up to this. But, like, the last 2 weeks, or last 13 games, I guess, 21-45, 8 doubles, 3 homers. Jorge Castillo of the Times talked to Taylor about it. And he said I'm trying to think. Oh, yeah. So he implemented a quote, substantial mechanical changes in early May. And that's basically when he started hitting. And it said in an attempt to regain his 2017 form, and that was his breakout year. So, like, he's sort of getting back to that. But then the point, this is a quote from Taylor to Castillo, probably around the time when Siegs got hurt. So, mental note, they call Corey Seager Siegs.
I just realized I hate all the Dodger nicknames, by the way. Every time it comes up.
It could have been like Seegy or something, you know.
Usually it is something like that.
Yeah. Probably around the time when Siegs got hurt, I just realized I needed to start a little earlier. And he's talking about his swing at that point. And that was the only mechanical adjustment I made. So he just like tweaked it a little bit, and he's been basically just stinging the ball since then.
I mean, May and June combined, a 926 OPS.
Right. So, like, productive guy. And then, so I guess Craig's question was, like, how does he fit into this? Right? Like, what's the playing time situation? So the timetable we talked about a little bit. So, Freeze is going to be back, like, this week before the All-Star break. And then the plan is Seager and Pollock in Boston. Mm-hmm. So, it creates a logjam for sure. But, like, it means two competitions for playing time. One is, I mean, because they're going to play Pollock. Like, I looked earlier, so he got injured like in his 30th game. So he played 28 of the 30. He started 26 of the 30. Seager is more every day as well. He got hurt in game 66. He had played 65 games. He started 61 of 66. So these are like everyday guys. Dave Roberts has said he's going to play Pollock every day. I think they'll still be cautious. So there'll be like time to give them rest days and things like that. So it's maybe not every day, but like it's basically every day. So like for me, it sets up two competitions. One, Alex Verdugo and Jock Peterson. The other one is Kike and Chris Taylor. And there might not be room for both because, like, you have to get Muncy in there. And, like, if it's basically, like, it could be, like, all four of those guys for, like, one regular spot in a weird way. Because, like, someone has to be in the outfield. It could be Taylor or it could be any of those guys because they all play the outfield. But, like, one of those guys is going to man left field. And then that's why they've been using Jock Peterson at first because they like Verdugo so much. But then if that happens, Taylor's not playing short. And if you have Peterson at first, that means you have Muncy at second. Or do you, because are you going to really take out Max Muncy because you have to play Jock Peterson at first? Like, no way. But
Chris Taylor is also sort of the ultimate rest guy, and Muncy helps out here too, where you can move Muncy the third when Turner sits. So it feels like there's going to be between those competitions, one of them will break to where two of them are basically playing every day and just rotating rest days. But one of them has to be a primary either bench guy, or they figure out like some sort of platooning situation where their start time basically gets cut in half.
The way they're hitting now, Kike is like,
and that's who I was figuring. Time. Yeah.
And, like, Peterson really didn't have a very good June, but he's been playing mostly every day. I think he suffers a little. But ultimately, they play Muncy every day. So that means either they lay off Jock at first or they are, like, less likely to play Taylor as much. But I think Taylor still plays. So, like, I think I don't think Peterson's going to be playing first a lot. Basically, I think if he plays, it'll be in left field, and then Verdugo gets kind of the shaft in some of those cases. But again, he'll also be a fill-in guy for Pollock in center, and maybe he shares time with Peterson in left against righties. So, and Verdugo can play against lefties while Peterson can't. So, but then again, Chris Taylor still has to play, and so like this is going to be interesting to see how they do it. But then again, as we always talk about this, while we're like trying to figure out how they maneuver, like someone else is probably going to get hurt, and then they'll open up another thing. So that'll answer it. But as it stands now, it's going to be a lot of those guys. It just makes their bench like pretty great. It's already been like very productive, but a lot of rookies. now it's like more established guys. That'll be an awesome bench, basically, if it plays out like they want it to.
And if there is a front office and a manager that can handle it, it's Dave Roberts and this Dodgers team. They've shown it before.
Yeah,
this is the team that knows how to do it. So I'm interested to see it, but I'm not worried about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it almost always works itself out. Like they're going to give Pollock a lot of rope, and look, but eventually, like if he doesn't hit, he'll lose playing time. Like
yeah.
He's going to be here for a while, so they're not going to like alienate him. But I mean, it's a competition too. Like, you know, the thing is, like we talked about this like last week. They've built this huge lead. Like they still have the best record in the majors. They have the best run differential. They have the largest lead in baseball. It's 12 games. They've built this cushion. They gave pitchers extra rest twice in the last on this stretch. So like they inserted a guy in there because they could, and like because they wanted to make sure guys are rested. So I think they're going to lean toward rest and off days, and they're not going to push it. Last year they had to push it because their playoff life was in jeopardy. You know, like they were facing a 3-team race in the NL West, and they trailed at the beginning of September. And then because guys weren't producing, that's when they went into the like platooning almost everywhere, and it worked for them like down the stretch. So if something happens where they're like forced to do something, they'll pull the plug on like a Pollock, they'll pull the plug on Barnes, that kind of a thing. But the thing is, the fact that they have a big lead, and it would take a lot to like pull plugs right now, because they are operating on, let's make sure everyone gets healthy for October, and that's mm-hmm. our most important thing.
Yeah, I think the only thing that could be interesting really quick and go to the catching situation before we go do a little business is, do they want to see Will Smith more in the starting role, maybe a little more earlier than they want, just to see how he responds to that or not? I'll be interested to see that, if that's the plug that could get pulled a little bit sooner than, say, sort of mid to late August.
Yeah, they'd be fine if they did it in August. Like, even if they did it like in early September, that they'd be fine with that.
Okay.
But yeah.
That could make sense with the roster call-ups. I could see that in a similar way, where Corey Seager kind of forced himself onto the playoff roster in his September call-up. I could see them giving him that chance to do that.
Right.
Well, I want to talk about Jock Peterson a little bit after this break. What do you think about Jock at first? That's Craig's second question.
Yeah. Not a fan.
Like, I don't know. It was great. What are you talking about?
It's just like,
this is meant to be entertaining, Eric.
I get why they're doing it. Yeah, I just like, I don't know. I mean, look, it's making a position change that he's never played before, and you're like doing it like in the middle of a season. So that's in itself difficult. So it's not necessarily on Jock like that he's bad at first, but it takes a lot to get used to. So you can't expect him to like just take to it right away. But, and like I said, this is one of those things where they've built themselves enough cushion to experiment with things like this because they have such a big lead. But, you know, he was hitting, he's against righties, he's slumped pretty badly of late. So, you know, the push to like, we have to get his bat in there isn't that strong. I think you still play him against righties. So, but Verdugo has been just as strong, and he's better defensively everywhere. I mean, outfield's going to be the thing. So, it's one of those things like the question's going to be basically, would I rather have Jock Peterson in the lineup in total, or this is against a righty, let's say, or Chris Taylor, right? Because you could put Muncy at first, Taylor at second, and keep Verdugo in there. And I think right now you have to go Taylor. I mean, you still, not that Taylor has to play every day, but I think like, I don't see the need. Like you do this if he's hitting so well, but they just can't fit him in the outfield, but he's not hitting well enough that they absolutely have to have him in the lineup. And if they do, I think just play him in left.
Yeah. And he's always been a really streaky hitter. So who knows, you know, 3-4 weeks from now, this could be a completely different story. But with where the Dodgers are right now, I think that's what you got to kind of have to do. Kike and Jock kind of getting the rougher end of the playing time situation once all these guys come back.
Yeah. So I think too, like, so Jock in June was 569 OPS. He was hit 186. He actually ended the month on a 6-game hitting streak. So 9 of the 16 hits came in the last 6 days. So, you know, like you said, streaky hitter. We've seen this before. He's going to play enough, but I think we're going to see him more. It just makes more sense with the roster that he'll be in left field. And then Verdugo gets screwed in that case, or it's on days where Pollock gets a rest or something and Verdugo's in center. But I think everyone's going to play to some extent. But yeah, I don't see the need to have Peterson at first at this point.
So Craig has one more question for us, but you have some questions for me, for us.
Yeah, I think it's something, not necessarily a competition, or it could be, I guess, but just thinking about like post All-Star break and other things like that. Just wanted to gauge where you're at on some of these things, and it talks about some of the players who are coming back. So after the break, the Dodgers have 70 games left on the schedule. How many of those 70 games will Corey Seager play?
You're putting me on a spot because the last, like I said, I had him as a like 3-4 weeks from now, not 2 weeks from now.
No, he's 70 games. Assume Boston series.
Assume I get to see his first game back, which is very exciting. Right. 70 games. Player start.
Keep in mind, he played 65 out of 66 games before.
I believe the number is going to be very high. But with the Dodgers lead, they could shut a lot of this team down, especially with the September call. This is really interesting.
You have to factor that in, yeah.
Of 70 games, he will play 66.
Oh, okay. I think he's going to play 63.
Oh, okay.
Okay, next question. How many games will AJ Pollock play of those 70 games? And then just to refresh, he played 28 out of 30 before he got hurt, and he started 26 out of 30.
Mm-hmm. Of 70. But he's definitely a guy I think you rest near the end if you're still leading.
I can answer first if you want me to.
No,
take
no,
this one
I
first.
Like this. I like okay. this because okay, I'll good, just good, good. I'll lean on your answers too much otherwise. 60.
Okay, so 60 out of 70. I said 63 for Seager. Okay.
I'm feeling how many did you say for?
So for Pollock, I think let's go. I'm gonna say 57.
Okay. I think I like your number a little more.
I just go three less than whatever you say.
Okay.
Okay, so now a more nebulous one, because we really don't know the answer to this, like when he's coming back, but how many games will Rich Hill start in the second half? As of now, I believe the report is Rich Hill will not pick up a baseball until the All-Star break, so not beginning a throwing program yet. So you got to be able to do a throwing program before you can do bullpen sessions. Then you can get into rehab games. So in my mind, at best, he's like a mid-August return to the Dodgers, and that's like if everything goes right, I think. So that's sort of where my head's at. But what do you think?
Seven
starts. So basically, like all of September, and maybe a couple starts in August.
Yep.
I'll say 6.
Okay. You're doing this Price is Right thing.
No, that's the thing. I offered to go first. Julio Urias, what is his final inning count for the entire season? As of right now, on Monday, through 86 games, he's at, 50 and a third innings.
Doing math real quick.
keep in mind, like, it's sort of related to when is he back in starting rotation, that kind of a thing, but it's not that. It's just like, you know, it'll be a mix because he's still going to pitch in relief for a while.
Yeah. I will say 140. what's he at now?
50 and a third.
That's less than I thought. So I'll back off on that. 85.
Okay. Wow. So for the first time, I'm going to go higher than you. I think his regular season innings are going to end up at about 95.
Okay. Yeah, I almost went like straight 100, but
yeah,
it's hard to predict.
Right. Like,
and he's an easy candidate for like 2 week phantom DL kind of thing, where they're like, let's just like kind of like AKA send him to Arizona, stretch him out a little bit.
Yeah. Here's your rest period, you know, do whatever, like that kind of thing. Okay. I have one more. How many players do the Dodgers acquire via trade by July 31st? So people outside the organization added to the active roster. Now, keep in mind, if they're acquired on July 31st, it's added like on the August 1st or whatever, but we'll count those for this purpose.
So the 25-man roster.
Yeah.
Three. No, jeez. Yeah. The bench is so deep. Two.
Right. Two. Okay. So my number is actually three. We were going to tie. I think three relievers.
A starter and two relievers.
Yes. I think they're going to go starter and two relievers because it sort of, I think it'll round everything out and it gives them Hill insurance.
I can't see them doing this over just starting Will Smith, but a catch, like if there's a catcher to be got, I don't know. I can't think of one, but that could be interesting.
Look,
as NL something Central they could is, be interested at.
The NL Central is so bunched together, maybe they could trade for Yasmani Grandal. that'd be funny. That's all the questions I had. They were baseball related, so I wanted to get them in before Craig's mandatory food questions. So.
Tater tots as a bar food. What do you think about it, and what is your salt preference of choice?
I like tater tots in general. Mm-hmm. They're a good like chili cheese vehicle. It's messy. Like you need, I think, depending on the place, you probably need a fork if that's the case. You could, if it's a thing, you do need a fork. You're not barbaric. Just for other sauce, like, I guess I'm pretty plain. I guess I don't have tater tots a ton. I'm pretty much a ketchup guy if I have to dip them in something. But I guess I haven't had them often enough. I would imagine they'd be pretty good in cheese sauce. I think mm-hmm. I've had that, pretty sure. But other than that, I'd be willing to hear other alternatives. But I'm not a big ranch guy, but I would imagine that's probably popular. But yeah, it's probably ketchup or cheese sauce for me if it's not like a chili cheese tater tots thing.
I think tater tots are almost always just worse fries, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't hate them, but so often when I go to a place that has both, if I go to the place often enough, I'll have both and end up thinking that the fries are better. So that's my personal preference. I do like ranch with mine, but just plain old ketchup is good. They're really good with jalapenos and onions and cheese sauce.
Sure, that would be, that's good.
You can treat them as sort of a Midwest nacho kind of thing.
My fry of choice is a crinkle cut fry.
Sure.
And for me, like, I can handle, like, steak fries. I don't mind them. I like them better than, like, shoestring fries, I
guess. You're wrong.
But to me, like, part of the drawback of steak fries is, like, there's just so much potato in the middle. Like, and I know you're eating potatoes, right? But it's, like, I can see where that's a drawback of tater tot. Like, it's, like, a worse steak fry.
Yes.
So you almost have, unless it's cooked, like, if it's properly crunchy, it gets into the crinkle cut territory for me. But if it's like an average tater tot, probably not better than a steak fry. So I think you're right in that regard.
No, close the book on that one. You've got a Dodgers rewind for us.
I do. So as always, it's usually something random that'll cause me to think of these. And last week on Saturday, in fact, was the 29th anniversary of Fernando Valenzuela's no-hitter. I just remember that game because my cousin and I, he lived in Mission Viejo. I lived in Palm Springs growing up. We're a year apart. We would hang out at each other's place like for a week. Like he'd come visit me for a week. I'd come visit him for a week. And we were like best of friends growing up, so close, obviously. But he was at my house for that game, and it was an ESPN game. And this was back when like not every game was televised. It was like a big deal to like still be on TV at that point. The TV sort of explosion hadn't happened yet, and ESPN had I think it was a Wednesday. And I guess I could have looked this up, but there were two games. The first game was Toronto. Was playing, and Dave Stewart, it was the A's in Toronto because Dave Stewart was on the A's. Dave Stewart threw a no-hitter in the first game of the ESPN doubleheader, and then they went to Los Angeles. And the legend goes, the Dodgers were watching that game in the clubhouse on ESPN, and then Fernando, like, you know, who knows if this is true, but he apparently said to someone, like, you're about to see another no-hitter, or, you know, something dumb, something like obvious. But who knows? I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he went out and did it. This was like, you know, end of the line Dodger-wise for Fernando because he was eventually released the next year. But he ended up pitching in the majors for, like, you know, the better part of the next decade, like 6 or 7 years. So, but he was not Fernando at that point. Like, he was, you know, diminished, but still, he was wearing glasses, which was different. But at the end of that game, it was a double play by old friend Pedro Guerrero, who hit it like off Fernando up the middle, and it went right to the second baseman who threw to Eddie Murray at first. This was like just old friend city. It was so great. But the guy at second base who got the ground ball was Juan Samuel. And I have this – I don't know why I liked Juan Samuel so much. I think it was excuse me. I started collecting baseball cards in 1985. So I just remember looking at the back of one of his like Donruss cards, I guess, and seeing like all of his like crazy numbers. Like his first 4 years, it was with the Phillies. Like he had double digits in doubles, triples, home runs, and steals. And like that, it's pretty rare to do it 4 years in a row is like super rare, but like it happens like more often than you think, but like nobody hits 10 triples these days anymore. So it's hard, but back then it wasn't that big of a deal, but I always thought it was cool. But he like led the league in triples as a rookie at like 19, and he stole like 72 bases or something. For some reason, I don't know why I thought this was an accomplishment, but he had 701 at bats as a rookie. So not plate appearances, but I'm like, ooh, he led the league in at bats. He must be good. Like that was in my head. But then I looked it up. If you had to guess, in Major League history, how many players have had 700 at bats in a season?
Going back all time. Wow. I wonder, was it more? Probably less common, right? Probably just let plays versus let.
And Juan Samuel did this as a rookie.
700 plate appearances?
No, at bats.
At bats. I was in plate appearances. I'm like, that would be higher. 25. I don't even know where to begin guessing that.
Okay, so the go to sort of in my head, because he played so much, would be like Pete Rose. Mm-hmm. And like if you're going on plate appearances, he did 700, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Jesus, 15 years he had 700 plate appearances. Never did 700 at bats. You know why he never did 700 at bats? Because four players have only done 700 at bats.
Four.
Yeah.
It just seems
Willie
that's
Wilson
so...
in 1980. Another.
I thought
like,
my 25 was high.
Walked.
Excuse me, low. Yeah. I was like, surely he's going to tell me, no, idiot, it's like 80. Like, it's still pretty rare.
So I was clearly onto something in my love of Juan Samuel's at bat total. But yeah, so Willie Wilson, Juan Samuel, and then Ichiro in 04, Jimmy Rollins in 07. So it's basically like leadoff guys who don't walk a ton. But he, then,
what would
like,
you
the
have guessed, by the way?
Oh, like honestly, yeah. Because I did the search the other day, and like I was thinking I would have probably had in the 25 range.
Okay,
I was thinking at least like 15 at the lowest was 15. Like
you paused, I think, to look up the numbers, and I'm just like, oh god, he's gonna call me an idiot.
No, No, that's the thing. Like, I was kind of open to it. I was like, wait a minute, who's done this? Like, I didn't know either. But, like, sort of the underbelly of Samwell, right? He also led the league in strikeouts his first four seasons. So, but, and, like, back then, it mattered more, you know? People still gripe about, like strikeouts now, but they just generally don't care. Like, but he was productive. He averaged, like, 3.2 WAR his first 4 years. He basically only had one other good season in his career, even though he played 16 seasons. That season was with the Dodgers. It was in 91. They were close to winning the pennant or winning the National League West. He had 2.6 WAR at second, 12 homers, 103 OPS plus, just generally good player, stole 23 bases. He, on the back of his baseball card, which I'm including a picture of in the notes, this was 92 tops. He had a walk-off triple on September 21st, 91, against the Braves, the team they were fighting for the division. And I looked, that put the Dodgers a half a game up with 11 games to play. And then they won on Sunday, so they were 1.5 up. I guess after Sunday, they had 11 games left. They were actually up a game on the Braves with four remaining, and then they lost three straight, and they lost the division. But that walk-off triple was a Saturday game of the Braves series. I went Friday night with my friend Tom, and we sat in the bleachers when Ron Gant hit his 30th home run. He was the first guy since Willie Mays to go 30-30 in back-to-back years. My friend Tom was the first to get his hands on the home run ball. He had it on the fly, but then someone pushed him in the back and he dropped it. And then in the fracas that ensued, someone else came up with the ball. So his shot at glory was so closely denied. But the Dodgers got him from the Mets in 89, Juan Samwell. For Mike Marshall and Alejandro Pena, two guys who were on their 88 championship team, and Marshall was – they were both there for most of the 80s, actually. And then in 92, he kind of hit the floor with them. They released him at the end of July. He ended up playing like 6.5 more years. He played 16 years in the major, 7 teams. So he was the third base coach with the Orioles in 2010. And they fired, I think Ray Miller was the first manager that year. But then they fired Juan Samwell after only 51 games. And then they hired Buck Showalter. And then the Orioles actually were good for a little bit. And then before they became the Orioles again. And they've been bad the last couple years. But Juan Samwell, that was in my head for all those reasons. So he was an important part of that game, you know, on the last out. So that's what made me think of him. And that's this week's Dodger Rewind.
And before we wrap it up, I'm going to hand it to you. I know you wanted to handle this. Some sad news in the baseball world today, and I know you wanted to just say a few things about it.
Yeah. So we're recording on a Monday night. We usually record Monday morning. This afternoon, got an email. It was like Angel's like PR team. And, you know, they get a lot of these emails. It's just like a statement or something, and you don't pay attention to a ton of them. They're a lot of them aren't relevant, but I just saw the subject and it said, it's like statement on the passing of Tyler Skaggs. And I was like, wait a minute. Like I had like almost forgotten about him. Like he's an active pitcher with the team. And then like, wait a minute, what? And like, I did a double take and the Angels are in Texas, played the Rangers, and he was found dead in his hotel room. He was going to turn 28 next Saturday. It's terrible. Like nobody knows the cause of death yet. I'm not speculating on any of that. It's just, no matter what it is though, it still sucks. Like it just, it's a guy like in the prime of his life, he's an athlete and he's gone. And like his team loved him, his family loved him, all that kind of stuff. But man, it just like, Fabian Ardea on The Athletic, he covered the Angels quite a bit, and he talked to Skaggs a lot, and he mentioned that Skaggs is from Santa Monica, went to high school out here. He said he was really looking forward to pitching at Dodger Stadium, and the Angels are in town in like 3 weeks. So just crushing, man. Like it just sucks. Heart goes out to like everyone who knew Skaggs and like just the baseball world. It's just terrible when this kind of thing happens. And I don't know, man, like you just, you know, sports, I joke around a lot, and I try to have fun with sports, and it's hard to do that when something like this happens, and it just makes you want to like appreciate everything. So like, if you're thinking of like going to a game or like enjoying a game, like do it, you know, enjoy it while you can, because every moment's precious, and you know, you just never know when it's going to all be taken away. So this is a tragedy, and very sorry to hear about the passing of Tyler Skaggs.